letter. Those people have appealed for cooperation. And for money. And I've also made the speaker join that appeal. I appeal to you to talk over things together. We have talked about time, thought, and fear. And as we said, this is not a lecture about a particular subject intended to inform or instruct. This is a conversation between you and the speaker. Together, we're going to look at all the things that we consider are important in our life, our daily life, not only our life as a businessman or a doctor or a professor or a scientist and so on. Or if you want to belong to that group, gurus. We are not concerned about others, but rather we are going to have a conversation in which there is no authority, in which there is no specialist. We're all laymen. And together, we're going to talk about what we have done in the past, through talks and questions and answers, and also we're going to talk over to this morning, which is rather rainy and windy, I'm sorry. It was a lovely day yesterday. And we're going to talk over together about freedom, self-interest, pleasure, pain, sorrow, and love this morning. And if there is time, we'll also talk about death, if that is all right with you. As we said previously, we are a rather serious group, at least the speaker is. He's been at it for the last 7 years or more. And just attending a couple of talks or reading some printed words is not going to solve our problems. It's not going to help us. And the speaker is not trying to help you. Please be convinced of that, assured that the speaker is no authority and therefore is not a person to whom you can turn to help, to be helped. there are others who might help you. And if you want to be helped, then one may point out most respectfully, you leave your problems to be solved to others, and they will solve them according to their desires, self-interest, their power, their position, and all that business. So we are ordinary laymen talking over together. We're going to inquire together, face the facts, not the ideas about the fact, but facts, and not ideologies. They're meaningless. Not about theories, speculations, who is illumined, who is not, who is what, nearer God than you, but together we're going to go into this question of freedom. What relationship has freedom to time? And time to thought and action. Because we live by action. Everything we do is action, not a particular action. In the business world, or in the scientific world, or in the speculative world called philosophy. But rather, we are going to look at things as they are. There's a great deal of anarchy in the world. Chaos. Disorder. And who has brought this about? This is our first question. Who is responsible for all the mess that we have in the world, economically, socially, politically, and so on, all leading up to war? The wars going on, terrible wars, now. And do we, each one of us, realize, not intellectually but actually, in our daily life, the house in which we live, not only the house built by man outside, but the house inside? Do we realize how disorderly it is? Contradictory. How very little freedom we have. That word freedom also implies love. Not just freedom to do what you like, when you like, where you like. But we are living on this earth, all of us, and each one is seeking his own freedom, his own expression, his own fulfillment, his own path to enlightenment, whatever that be, his own particular form of religion, superstition, belief, faith, and all the things that go with it, with authority, hierarchical authority, politically, religiously, and so on. So we have very little freedom. And that word, which is so freely used by every psychopath, and every human being, whether he lives in Russia where the tyranny is appalling, or in so-called democratic world, every human being, inwardly, consciously or unconsciously, needs freedom, like every tree in the world needs freedom to grow, to have that sense of quality of dignity, love. And what's the relationship of freedom to self-interest? Please, we are talking things over together. You are not, if I may point out, talking, listening to a speaker, listening to a man on the platform. He's not important at all. And as a speaker really means this. He's not important, the speaker. But perhaps you might give your ear to what he says as two friends talking over things very seriously. We'll ask him, what is the relationship between freedom and self-interest? Where do you draw the line between freedom and self-interest? And what is self-interest? What is its relationship to thought and to time? Please, all these questions are involved in freedom. Bear in mind that freedom is not fulfilling one's own ambitions, greed, envy, and so on. What is the relationship of self-interest with regard to freedom? You know what self-interest is? Self-interest may hide under every stone of our life. Right? Are we talking together? Are you quite sure we are talking together? Not somebody on higher up, but we're all sitting on the same level. What is self-interest? Can one consciously, deliberately inquire into that? How deep, how superficial, where it is necessary, where it is totally, completely, has no place at all. You understand my question? We are together question. Self-interest has brought about a great deal of confusion in the world. Great deal of disorder. Confusion, conflict. Whether that self-interest be identified with a country, with a community, with a family, or with God, the beliefs, the faiths, and so on. It's all self-interest. Seeking enlightenment, God's sake. As though you can seek it. Also, in that search, there is this self-interest. And also there is self-interest when you build a house, have insurance, mortgages. and the self-interest is encouraged commercially. And also by all religions. They talk about liberation, but self-interest first. And we have to live in this world. We have to function, to earn money, have children, be married or not married. And living in this world of the 20th century, how deep or how superficial is our self-interest? It's important to inquire into this. Self-interest divides people, right? We and they, you and I, my interest opposed to your interest. My family, our family interests oppose your family interests. Your country, my country, in which I have invested a great deal of emotion and physical interest, for which I am willing to fight and kill, which is war. And we invest our interest in ideas, faith, beliefs, dogmas, in rituals and so on. This whole cycle, at the root of it, there is a great deal of self-interest. Now can one live in this world daily, clearly, with self-interest where it is necessary? Please, I'm using this word carefully. Where it is physically necessary and psychologically, inwardly, it is totally abandoned. Is that possible? Are we together? Is it possible for each one of us living here in a very, very complex society, competitive, divided by agreement and disagreement, faith opposing another faith, this great division that's going on, not only individually, but collectively, and living in this world, where do we draw the line? Between self-interest and no self-interest whatsoever psychologically. Can we do that? You can talk about it endlessly, as we like to go to talks and lectures and listen to somebody. But here we have to observe together. You have to not only listen to each other verbally, but also deeply, inwardly, find out extensively, not just my self-interest, extensively. Wholly, where self-interest lies, and inwardly, psychologically, can one live without any kind of muttering of self, of the self, the me, which is the essence of self-interest. Another can't explain or say this is self-interest, this is not self-interest. That would be terrible. But one can find out for oneself either very carefully inquiring, step by step, hesitantly, not coming to any conclusion, and find out for oneself, because there is nobody going to help us. I think this we must be completely be assured of. Nobody is going to help us. They may pretend, and you may pretend, but the actuality is, after these 2.5 million years or 40,000 years, we are still seeking help, and we are stuck. We are coming to the end of our tether. And in the inquiry into self-interest, we have to go into the question also, what is freedom? And freedom implies love. Freedom does not mean irresponsibility, doing exactly what one wants, which has brought about such mess in the world. And also, what relationship is self-interest to thought? We went into the question of time the other day, and also thought, thinking. Shall we go into brief what time and thought need we? It's no good repeating it over and over again. It gets rather monotonous for the speaker at least. So he has to vary the words, the special phrasing, the silence between the phrases, all that's implied not to be bored for the speaker. But if you merely listen to what, to words, 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 and not act, then we'll be left only with ashes. Time, as we said, is part of evolution of the brain. 2.5 million years. Time is also sunrise, sunset. Time also is hope. I hope, one hopes. Time also is remembrance. Time is also all the knowledge, experience that one has gathered, which is knowledge, both scientific, personal, collective, racial, and so on. Time is tradition. And thought is based on a knowledge, which is the outcome of experience, whether that experience be personal, collective, racial, or traditional, is still knowledge. And knowledge is always limited, either in the infinite future or infinite past, because knowledge is essentially put together through experience, adding more and more and more to what already has been known. That's what the scientists are doing. That's what we are doing, adding more and more. So knowledge is always limited. Always. Past, present and future. And time is a process of this accumulation called knowledge. We needed time to go to the moon. Time to think it out. Time to cooperate collectively. And so on. So time, thought are not separate, they have one single movement. All right, are we going together? Or it's all just words. So time is not only the past, present and the future. The present modifying the past. And therefore the future of tomorrow is what I am today. So now, that is the moment, as you are sitting there, as you are listening, as you are paying perhaps attention, the now contains all time. So one really deeply, profoundly understands that, then change is totally meaningless. You are what you are now. And to remain with that. Not so well, I hope to change it, I'll become this, I'm violent, but I will be later non-violent, which is, you understand what we're talking about? We're together in this. Don't be puzzled, it's very, very simple. It is really terribly simple if you come to look at it. I'm violent today. I have been violent for the last 2.5 million years. So have you. We have been violent. Right? We've tried to cover it over with words, with explanations, with logical conclusions. But we are still violent. Killing each other, hurting each other, both physically and psychologically, competitive, barbarous, right? We are violent people. All that's going on in the world, throwing bombs, the terrorists, all the horrible things that are happening to the animals, to other human beings. Don't you know all this? Right? We know of this. We are violent people. If there is no transformation now, at this moment, at this second, tomorrow you will still be violent. Right? It's logical. Reasonable. You pay little attention to it. If you don't mind. If I'm angry, hating, antagonistic now, I'll be the same tomorrow. Right? It's hopeless. So, the now contains the past, the present, and the future. So any change implies a movement in time, right? I am this, but I will be that. That means time, which means I've really not captured the significance of time. But if I remain with what is completely, without any single movement away from that, that which I observe, hold, stay with, is me. Violence is not separate from me. I am violence. Anger is not separate from me. I am anger. Violence, greed, envy, I am that. But we have separated it. Therefore there is conflict. This is all very simple. I don't have this. It's clear between us somewhat. Not I am making clear to you. You are making the thing clear for yourself. So it's not you understand what is being said or and the speaker explains what he means. Or you can say, I don't understand you. You're not understanding the speaker, you're understanding yourself. You are looking at yourself. If you're not too depressed, you're not too lazy, if you're not too concerned with superficial things. So time, thought, self-interest, and in all this cycle, there is no freedom. Obviously. Where there is self-interest, there can never be said freedom. So obvious. So simple if you look at it. And the more simple it is, the more subtle, the more extraordinary depth it has. We ought also talk over together the whole acquisitive, pleasurable, gratifying process. All right? You are willing to go into all this? Don't say yep. It's like digging in the earth to find gold. You don't find gold scratching the earth, superficially scratching. You have to dig. You have to go down very, very deeply. Not up in the air, in the sky, but you are the entire humanity, as we said the other day. So you don't have to look for another to help you or to help you to dig or to go into yourself. You are that. You are the whole mankind. Because what you think, millions others think this. Think, not what they think about. Thinking. Thinking is common to all mankind, whether scientists, whether they are Buddhists or Tibetans or God knows what else. They all think. They all have pleasure sexually, or pleasure in attachment, in possession, pleasure in achieving position, money, glory, fame, and all that business. And all human beings, whatever race, color, prejudice, religion, they all go through pleasure, pain, anxiety, uncertainty, and sorrow. Right? So it's not your particular sorrow only. It's not your own particular pleasure. It's the pleasure of mankind. Right? We have always sought pleasure. Physically, psychologically. And if not finding there, we invent something extraterritorial. Little green men. Sorry to laugh. Pleasure in acquisition, possession. I possess you, you possess me. Think it over, look at it. And that pleasure is always clouded over with fear. So, pleasure, fear, self-interest, time, thought are all one movement, not separate movements. Right? And also we ought to inquire into what is suffering. Why man, from time beyond time, has suffered. They have done everything on God's earth to escape from suffering. Not only physical suffering, but much more important, psychological suffering. And in spite of all religions, one particular religion worshipping death, suffering, as they do in Christianity, and other religions having other escapes, they have never, man has never, or woman has never solved this problem. They bear with it, they tolerate it, they get crippled by it, they become psychopathic. Shed tears, and suffering is common to the whole lot of us in different forms. Either it becomes exaggerated, or you just shed tears and keep it to yourself and carry on. And there is always this killing of each other. Right? Thousands, millions upon millions have shed tears. The brutality of it all, the insanity of war. building armaments. Right? Millions and millions starve. I don't have to go into all that. It's all very clear. One nationality fighting another nationality. Another group of human beings like yourself. You may call yourself British, Indian or other self, labor. But you are human beings first. So, we're asking, is there an end to war, end to suffering? Not to war. As long as we are separate, as a family, as a community, or a clique, as a nation, religious and so on, this division is going to create all this perpetually conflict. You and me. We and they. You see how the game we have been playing. It was tribal, limited, now it's global. So we're asking ourselves, is there an end to sorrow? So I'll put this question seriously to yourself. Because without, where there is sorrow, there cannot be love. There can be sympathy, pity, tolerance, empathy. But generosity, pity, sympathy is not love. Love may contain all that or have all that, but their dark parts don't make the whole. You can collect all this sympathy, empathy, kindness, generosity, friendship, but that's not love. So, is there an end to sorrow? And it requires immense, great deal of energy to go into it, not just say, well, I'll think about it. Thinking may be the factor of sorrow. My son is dead, and I've got his photograph on the mantelpiece or on the piano in a silver frame. I remember. Remembrance is a process of thought, of course. Thinking how we enjoy the sunset together. How we walked in the forest, laughing, skipping, and he's gone. But the remembrance of him goes on. And that remembrance may be the factor of sorrow. I don't want to admit my son is dead, gone. To admit such a fact is to admit utter loneliness. And we don't want to face this good fact of being utterly by oneself. And so I look for another. I rely for my happiness, satisfaction, sexually or otherwise, look to another. And I play the same game over and over again. But I've not ended sorrow. Not I, speak up, but we have not ended sorrow. sorrow is not only self-pity, self-interest, but also the loss of that which I have had, the loss, the failure to fulfill, to achieve, to gain something which I have worked for. Not only physically, but psychologically, inwardly. All this implied in sorrow and much more. And we're asking of ourselves, nobody is putting this question or demand, this challenge to you, but you're asking this of yourself, whether sorrow can end. Not only the sorrow of oneself, of where it is there in oneself, but also the sorrow of mankind, of what you are. That means no killing another, of another. No psychological wounding another. Yes, sir. As we say, where there is sorrow, there cannot be love. Which is a fact. So we ought to inquire, or look, not inquire, but look, where, what is love? That word has been so used, so spat upon, dirtied and made ugly. I love my country. I love my God. I am devoted. I pray for love. Right? I am not loved, but I want to be loved. The love poems. Is love sensation? Please ask yourself all these questions. Is love a continuation and remembrance of pleasure? Is love desire? You know what desire is? May I go into briefly? What is desire? By which we are driven and riven, torn apart. What is that thing called desire? Not to suppress it, not to transmute it or do something with it. But what is the movement of desire? How does it come about? Are you putting this question to yourself, or do you want the speaker to explain? For God's sake. Let's go into it. We live by sensation, whether physical sensation or psychological sensation. Sensation is part of response, part of comparison and so on. Sensation, I sense, feel. I sense the atmosphere. Good or bad. Sensation. Right? That sensation comes about through seeing, touching, hearing. And then what happens after sensation? Oh, come. Thought comes in, uses that sensation as an image. Right? I see a nice house or a garden or a nice picture of furniture or a nice woman. And there is sensation, the sea. The observing contact, then sensation comes. Unless there is sensation, we are paralyzed, as most of us are. We are paralyzed if we don't have sensation in our legs, in our hands, in our all the rest of it. So, sensation, then, what happens? Thought takes sensation and makes that into an image, right? I see you beautifully dressed, clean, healthy, bright, good, a good brain and all the rest of that. I see that. The way you talk, the way you do this and that, and so on. Then thought says, I wish I were like him or her. At that moment, desire is born. Right? Sensation, then desire, then thought giving shape to that sensation. And if there is an interval between sensation and thought, then you can go into it much more, but not now. You understand? Are we somewhat together in this? You see, sir, our difficulty is we are so complex in our thinking. So, want to find out. Always looking, 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 finding an answer, problems, solutions, and how am I to do this? We are never simple. Not physically, for God, don't reduce having some food, little clothes of food, or eating one meal and all that. What is that kind of food that's called? I've forgotten the name of it, you know, from Japan. What's it? Huh? Macrobiotic. That's it. Go crazy on that. As one goes crazy about yoga and all the rest of it, Tai Chi, you know, we play. We are not playing. This isn't a fantasy. This is something you are hooked in. This is our life. Our everyday, lonely, ugly little life. So what is love? Can love exist where there is hate and fear? Where there is competition and comparison? Where there is conformity? Agreeing or disagreeing? Know it all this, sir? Or is love nothing to do with all this? Is love something in the brain, inside the skull? or is it something entirely beyond form and time? And where there is self-interest, there cannot be love. Obviously, so you can see there all this for oneself. Then what relationship has love to sorrow? Can love be compassion? Not only I love you, you love me. Love is not yours or mine, it's love. Right? I may be married, have children, sex, and all the rest of it. In all that there may be tenderness, generosity, politeness, kindliness, yielding, tolerating. That's not all, that's not love. So compassion and love are not separate, they are one. And can one live like that? You understand? Can one have this in one's life? Not in abstract moments or in moments when you are sitting by yourself on the sofa or walking in the woods. A flash, a scent, a perfume that seems for a second to transform your whole existence. Can we live our daily life with that perfume? Because that compassion has its own intelligence. Not the compassion of a man going out to India or to Africa and do some missionary work or helping the poor, desperate poor. That's not love. Where there's love, there's absolute freedom. Not to do what you like. Not to say, assert yourself. Or convert others, all that kind of silly stuff. So, that intelligence is not the intelligence of thought. Right? One needs a great deal of intelligence, tremendous lot of intelligence, to go to the moon or to put a submarine together, to build a computer, right? That's a partial intelligence. The scientist, the painter, the poet, the ordinary person who bakes a bread, that's part intelligence. It's not complete intelligence. And that holistic intelligence, the whole quality of that intelligence can only come about with the ending of sorrow and love. And that acts, not the action which is partially brought about by thought and time. May we get up, or shall we sit still? We can't hold hands of the hands, but who can sit quietly for a few minutes. Shall we? Good. Not meditate. Sit quietly. Kindly get up, then I'll speak over you better.